And there's also other communities as well that are stepping up, that you know, that have stepped up, actually, you know, that have been stepping up for many, many generations, for decades, I guess. And one of those communities is the Lubicon Cree and the Woodland Cree. Those communities are related. And my next panelist here is Melina Massimo Lubicon, who comes from that territory, and she's going to talk a bit about, you know, the struggle of her people. The Lubicon Cree struggle is one of the most visible struggles that there has been internationally for many years. And there's a whole new young generation of people coming up, and Melina is definitely one of those leaders that are stepping up to challenge big oil in that territory and to try and stop the devastation that these corporations are bringing. And so please help me in welcoming our good friend Melina Lubicon to the panel.
Hi, thank you. Like Clayton said, my name is Melina Miwapin Lubicon Massimo. I come from Lubicon Cree. Our territory is about 5 hours north of Edmonton, which is the capital city, quote unquote, of Alberta. Since the 1970s, logging companies and oil companies have been encroaching on our land. We are one of the only indigenous nations within Alberta that is unceded territory, because when the land navigators came up to sign Treaty 8, they didn't want to go as far up north to get our signatures from my relatives, so we actually are on unceded territory. We did not give our signatures off for the land, so that is considered unceded territory, even though the government does not consider that. They consider it territory to be developed, and they're not. They're, like Ariel said, we're also not getting consultation from the government and also the oil companies that are coming to encroach on the land. I guess one of the biggest things where most people know of Lubicon Cree was when, in the 80s, when we did put up a roadblock because of the logging companies that did come into the land. It was actually a Japanese logging company. And because the provincial government, as well as the Canadian government, were not listening and were trying to pass off responsibility to who gave this Japanese logging company to come onto the land, our chief went to Japan and protested outside of the logging company there, and that's how one of the successes that got that Japanese logging company off our land. However, we have not been as successful in oil extraction off the land. There are now up to over 400 pumps. Ours is more conventional oil extraction right now, but we are facing tar sands coming into our territory. So from these 400 oil pumps that are on our land, by 1980, around the time that I was born, there was 19 out of 21 stillbirths and miscarriages that had happened in our community. So I guess I was one of the lucky ones. And so that's one of the things that is happening, as well as because we have not made an agreement with the government, we still do not have running water in our community, even though we're on multi-billion-dollar industry and, you know, money-making place where a lot of other people are profiting off of it. But however, we're still living in below poverty levels with no new housing and also no water, so no running water till this day. And another thing that I wanted to talk about also was my family, because we were so isolated, there was actually no roads up into our territory, so it was just until recently, into the past 6 years, there now has been a road that has been paved, but has been paved for the companies to get their trucks through. And so this had really helped in the past to be able to keep our community very isolated, which, you know, was actually beneficial for maintaining our way of life and also maintaining our language. So I'm one of the few from my family that actually did leave and comes back frequently, but most of my family has stayed on the land and does speak Cree, and as well as tries to maintain our traditional way of life. However, that, like Ariel was saying, that is also affecting our family as well. My dad is a hunter as well, and he also, you know, I grew up eating moose meat all the time and being able to have this as a, you know, a traditional diet. And now my dad goes out every year and he has more and more trouble trying to find moose even. And, you know, now we're hearing that we can't even probably eat the moose because of all the contaminants that might be in the moose. So that's also an issue that we're also facing, is losing our traditional way of life and also losing our traditional trapping grounds, which my Muslim and my uncle has taken over from my grandfather when he passed. And one of the other things that I wanted to talk about was, because since the 1960s, the chief and council from my community, as well as in the Canadian government, have been in deliberations. And I have some of the communications that I have read, the only thing that the government is willing to offer our community is subsidiary funding, which is, you know, an equivalent of about $26,000 per community member, which is, you know, it's not even very much of an average living per year for a person to sustain themselves, because we can't continue to sustain our traditional way of life. So now this is happening, and so there has actually been a stalemate between the government and our chief and council, where they're not even in communication right now, because the government just continues to offer less and less of any sort of agreement that we can come to. And so the chief has decided to call off negotiations right now, and that's been going on periodically as I've been growing up, so I've heard different stories from that as well. And I guess with the advent of the tar sands, this is also going to be another huge issue that we're going to be dealing with, because it is crossing over into our territory as well, going into Peace River. And so this is why that I've decided to join up with Ariel and Clayton to be able to start a campaign that we can try to develop a really strategic campaign, so we can fight off these companies. Like Ariel was saying, when we went to Fort Chippewa, we flew over three of the developments, and as soon as all of us got off the airplane, I had a headache. Like, I just felt so sick from breathing in the contaminants that were just even coming up into the air and then flowing back into the community where she's talking about, where people are dying of cancer. And I can't even imagine this happening to my community as well, because we already have oil and logging and pulp and paper mill in our water, and then with tar sands coming in, and then also having more disruption from the development of the pipelines that they want to build from her territory going west into our territory, and then crossing over into BC territory, going into Tsimshian territory and reaching Haida Gwaii. It's going to not only affect the Cree Nation, the Dene Nation, Métis Nation, it's going to affect all these nations in northern, pardon? Oh yeah, it's all in the maps, you can read, so you can refer to that as well. It's going to affect a considerable amount of First Nations in the north. So this is one of the things that we're starting to work on, and I'm also going to start a documentary to show a visual representation of this, because I think, you know, people reading things, they can only feel so much, but once you visually see something, it's easier for people to connect to that. So I feel like that's probably the next step in bringing awareness to this issue, because I'm sure people will feel it in other ways. But there's also talk of a nuclear development plant in Peace River, which is 45 where I was born. It's about 45 minutes from our res, which is also another big issue. So we're just kind of getting tackled on all sides. So we're definitely reaching out and hoping that people can support, give us more information, and just support us when we do call. And thank you for listening. Aye, aye.